Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to have some kind of fun tonight. Once again, welcome to XM Satellite Radio listeners tuning into Channel 167 and, of course, our old standby and good friends at Sirius Satellite Radio on Channel 146, plus all the radio stations and all the ships at sea that carry the program, not to mention the Internet and what else? How else are we carried?
Various tinfoil hats around the country.
That's very true. We'll get to that in a moment, too. Don't forget, Sam Cedar fills in for me tomorrow night. I'll be on the road on my way to Seattle. I'll be broadcasting the program from Seattle KPTK Studios in Seattle on Friday evening. And then on Saturday, the big event in Seattle. A lot of famous people will be there, and they've invited me. So, Mensa Man was speaking at a town hall meeting in Cleveland yesterday. Maybe you saw some of it about corn and pigs and driplets and droplets and war and stuff. So you know what that means. Moron sounds on the program tonight. We'll get to that in a moment also. But breaking news from Newsweek of all places. MSNBC is saying breaking news. A new national intelligence estimate raises concerns that the terrorist group Al-Qaeda is growing stronger. Oh, no, really? That's what Newsweek is reporting, and that's what MSNBC is climbing all over itself. Now, this has to do with Michael Chertoff's gut feeling. Gut feeling. You know, he told the Chicago Tribune this week that he had a gut feeling that the country is entering a new period of increased risk for the Republican Party. So look for bombs and stuff. Well, he didn't say it that way, but that's pretty much what it means, don't you think? So a new national intelligence estimate, that's an NIE, presents a sobering analysis of terrorism threats to the United States, including concluding that Al-Qaeda has reconstituted its core structure along the Pakistani border and may now be stronger and more resilient then it appeared to be a year ago. So what does that mean? I see an awful lot of qualifiers in that sentence, don't you? All this according to three U.S. intelligence officials familiar with the draft document. The officials who asked not to be identified, talking about such sensitive matters, said the still classified document reflects growing jitters among U.S. counterterrorism officials, even while those officials stress there's no credible specific intelligence on any imminent threat to the homeland. Oh, my God. It just never stops, does it? Huh? See, now we're all supposed to go, oh, quick. Where's the duct tape and the plastic sheeting? Oh, God. Let me dive under the covers. George, save us. Michael Chertoff of the devil, save us. Please, somebody save us. I wonder who came up with this wonderful idea. Huh? Three U.S. intelligence officials. Let's see. Those are the same ones that provided intelligence for all sorts of things over the past 6 years, right? Look over here, you three U.S. intelligence officials. Look over here. You see this? This is my index finger. This is my ring finger. And right between them is this finger. Okay? Over the last few months, U.S. officials said the U.S. Embassy in Berlin has issued a number of warnings that Islamic militants associated with Al-Qaeda may be planning an attack on U.S. military facilities and personnel in Germany. The suspected plots are believed to be linked to an obscure terrorist network known as the Islamic Jihad Union. We've been telling you for years unions are no good. The group originated in Uzbekistan. But its German network has recently attracted recruits of other nationalities. Investigators also suspect it may have established contact with Al-Qaeda's high command. Holy jumping Jehoshaphat! What are we going to do? This kind of stuff just makes my bile rise. In the first place, after the September 11th attacks on this country, if we had worked cooperatively with policing agencies in countries that could have done something, along with Scotland Yard, the FBI, and Interpol, perhaps, maybe, just possibly, we would not be in the position we're in now. Perhaps we could have tracked them down, like we tracked down, arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced to prison the original group that first attacked the World Trade Center under, oh, who was that? Oh, yeah, Bill Clinton. But no, George Bush wanted to be, remember what he said, he hit the trifecta. I didn't want to be a war president, he said the other day in Cleveland. I didn't want to be a war president. I had greatness thrust on me. Wait, no, somebody else said that. Punks, liars, thugs, murderers, killers, and that's our guys, huh? So here we go again. Hold on to your asses, truth seekers, here we go. Al-Qaeda, Chertoff has a gut feeling, and 4 days later, wham! There it is! Uzbekistan! And it's called the, what's it called? The Al-Qaeda Gang Busters Union. Islamic Jihad Union. Yeah, that's it. That'll work. From Uzbekistan, by God! These people make me just, I don't know, Chertoff and Cheney and Bush and Elliot Abrams. I see Elliot Abrams' hand in this. Plus, who's the one that disappeared very quickly? Who is the former killer from Central America? And then we sent him to Iraq to organize the death squads there. Oh, yeah, Negroponte. Where's he lately, huh? Where's that slimy Negroponte? Where's he been? Oh, yeah, he travels with Condi once in a while, but so does Elliot Abrams. What are these vermin doing? Anybody got a line on Negroponte? His name hasn't surfaced lately, like something floating in a toilet bowl. Where's Negroponte? Islamic Jihad Union? Local 46? Please stop. Anyway, prepare yourself. Dirty bombs and all sorts of stuff are about to happen in the U.S. of A. Yes, indeed. By God, George W. Bush, an approval rating of 26%? No, you don't. I'm a war president. By God, I'll show you war. What do we got? We got 7 or 8 Republican senators that left the party. I'll show them. Just watch. Just watch what happens over the next couple of weeks. Let's get Chertoff to talk about his innards, and then we'll get this report out. We can always count on Michael Isikoff over at Newsweek. He's been on the payroll for Christ knows how long. We'll get him to write something. Yeah, that's the ticket. Then we'll get MSNBC to breaking news. Brrr. Spooks, haints, ghosts. Islamic Jihad Union. Union! Remember that. Union! Remember that word. They're trying to bring unions to Walmart. Union! Islamic Jihad Union! Brilliant. Have I mentioned yet this week how much these people turn my stomach? Lady Bird Johnson is dead. Age 94. The first U.S. environmentalist of any consequence. I thought she was a decent person. I really, really did. And boy, our little interview with former Senator Mike Gravel last night certainly generated an awful lot of heat. No light, but a lot of heat. And that's okay. I've had to wade through the emails today, which I find fun. The ones that I find fun, whenever we get to a situation where all of a sudden the nut meter starts going off on my email account, says, here they come, here come a bunch of nuts. I usually click it into overdrive and send a form letter. But I've got two to share with you. Not bad ones, just two that will sum up the whole shtick last night. So stick around. All right, True Seekers, we have miles to go before we sleep here. And as Catherine informed me, moron sounds tonight. So lots of fun and frivolity heading your way. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
To keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, man. And the drones just sit there and applaud. In the final days of his imploding candidacy, John McCain has taken a page out of Richard Nixon's playbook, finding increasingly bizarre explanations for his political failures. Strangest of all, he reportedly feels his handlers forced him to wear, quote, gay sweaters, end quote. According to one insider, the nitpicking was the crescendo of a tirade by the Arizona senator in which he blistered aides about the minutiae of the campaign. While many septuagenarians live in a perpetual state of sweater weather, McCain reportedly declared his frustration with being told to don the perceived homosexual outerwear in order to look younger and more approachable. The source of this story says, quote, he wasn't happy being dictated to. The sweaters were part of that, end quote. The Mr. Rogers-inspired wardrobe was on its finest display last spring when the candidate wore a roomy black snuggly while standing under the pounding Iraq sun. Washington insiders wondered why the campaign would place the candidate in such obviously awkward garb. While it may seem as if the senator is screaming at the rain, one source from a rival campaign explains the real importance of Sweatergate. Quote, do those unflattering sweaters matter in the grand scheme of things? Probably not. But it's indicative of how McCain has lost his way. He just allowed himself to be managed into oblivion. End quote. The McCain campaign did not officially respond for a comment, but one source that has been close to the senator poses the question most J. Crew shoppers are no doubt asking, how can a crew neck sweater make you look gay? They make him look silly, old too, but not gay! That's Romney's department! This is from the radaronline.com blog site. A gay, so there's a picture. That's a gay sweater? Oh my God, Kathy, I must have 10 of those.
I would love to get Gravel and McCain on a debate on this. Just come out. Be proud of your gay sweaters. Let the people vote on them.
McCain.
Well, direct democracy.
McCain.
Your mother's wrong.
McCain actually said he's pissed off because they made him wear a gay sweater.
Yeah, that's why he can't raise any money and his staff quit.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, kill me now. Back to less serious stories than McCain's gay sweater, the one we were talking about before the break, and that is the resurgence of Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, where it is given official sanctuary by our puppet over there, the military dictator Musharraf, General Musharraf, to whom we have handed billions of dollars, which goes immediately to Al-Qaeda, so they can buy immediate weapons from the Russians, the Israelis, and the Americans. Why, of course! It all comes together now, doesn't it? But wait, there's more! Haven't we been funding An organization based in Iran called MEK. Isn't that organization identified by the United States State Department as a terrorist organization? And aren't we funding it because MEK wants to overthrow the Ayatollahs, too? Jesus. So here we are. Here we are, folks. Al-Qaeda is resurging because we are feeding them, clothing them, arming them, housing them, sending them burqa-clad women. Whatever the hell it is that we're doing it. And Chertoff says he has a gut feeling something's going to happen this summer. Chertoff of the devil? So do I. I really do. I think even as we sit here on this little radio program, Michael, the Bush crime family's top minions, that would be Rove and Cheney, and Rove, and did I mention Cheney? They are already putting together the next 9/11. What did Robert Kennedy Jr. say at Live Earth? The last thing he said, I'll see you at the barricades. Oh, my God. All right. We have a break coming here very quickly. So when we come back, a couple of letters, emails, very quick ones about what happened last night with with Mike Gravel. I had no idea the night was going to turn out that way. And then we shall file that forever away in a dark, spiderwebby corner of the Malloy studio, never to take it out again. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M. We're reaching a point where we can't turn back. Let's lose the guns and let's lose the bombs. We'll stop the corporate contributions that the bill supports. Well, I'll be sleeping on this bitch until I start to snore. Cause I won't carry guns for an oil war. A salam, moving like a salam. Peace to the Middle East, peace to Islam. Now don't get us wrong, cause we love America. But that's no reason to get hysterical. They're laying on the zero. If we ain't waffles, we ain't having it. In a world going out of time to think right.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. We've only been on, the program's only half an hour old. Oh no, it's going to be one of those nights. I feel like I've been here for 3 hours already. Where's the wine? No? Okay. This is about Gravel Brain. That's how it's, the subject line says, Gravel Brain. This has to do with our, I don't know why some of you people insist on calling politicians names. I don't know where you get that. Or maybe it's Gravel Brain. That's just awful. I mean, show a little respect, right? All right, this is from, who's this from? I have to give you the name first here. This is from Carl and Madeline. And they write, seems to me Mr. Gravel has gravel for brains. When I first heard him in the first debate, I was impressed, just like everyone else, because he was mincing no words about Iraq, bashing a lot of the crap the Democrats pull and took a few digs at Hillary. But he also had a limited time to make a fool of himself. When he included Kucinich in his tirade, I began to wonder about him. Then he came out with a TV ad of himself staring at the camera for the full time, saying nothing. That symbolism totally escaped me, and when he explained it on a later talk show, it still escaped me. He was on a Sunday morning TV show, and I had no idea what he was talking about. He just made me very uncomfortable. Then came your show. In the middle of your show, my husband said, "Is this man still in the Senate?" Thankfully, we found out. No. Personally, I don't know what the difference is between a republic and a democracy, but he wouldn't let you talk. I was just wishing the man would shut up already. When you finally told him that you asked questions for his viewpoint, not his wisdom, and if you didn't stop talking over, you're going to cut him off, we said, "Amen, thank you, Lord." When the gay man called, he never did answer the question, only patronized him. The prebate idea took the cake. Can't you just see all the paperwork to send people money for taxes they are yet to pay? Stupid doesn't even describe it. The sales tax plan itself is nuts, but he wants to exempt living staples from taxation, then exempt, but then exempt them. Florida doesn't tax food or drugs. You just don't collect the tax in the first place. Hello? The man has rocks for brains, is totally promoting anarchy, is full of hostility toward everyone while patronizing them, and he makes me want to scream. Hope Stephanie Miller limits his time tomorrow. I doubt she knows what she is in for. At least when your callers talk or your other guests talk, we know what they are saying, even if we don't agree with them. Listening to Gravelhead is like listening to an electric sledgehammer while the mess around him accumulates. Love, Carla Madeline. Yeah. Yeah, that was just astonishing interview last night. That was even worse than Dick Gephardt, and that's really saying something. And this from Bob. This is our good friend at headonradio.com, Bob Kincaid. He writes, Mike, I've been following both Gravel and Ron Paul for a while. I think they're both in the race for very particular nefarious reasons. The reason is, as you intimated, Dennis Kucinich. Of all the Democrats running, only Dennis can claim to have been 100% correct about every issue since 2003. Ron Paul is there on the GOP side to siphon any sort of progressivism that might rear its head among Republicans who happen to wake up. And Gravel's anti-war shtick is there to split real progressives away from what could still turn out to be a very cogent-focused Kucinich campaign. Mike, I'm seeing this stuff all over the blogosphere. People who support Ron Paul are quoting Will Rivers Pitt. And Democrats who one would expect to be supporting Dennis can be seen singing Gravel's praises. Something wicked this way comes, Mike. And it's picking up speed. Bob. Yeah. I mean, some of us, Bob is one, I certainly put myself in the class, can spot a shill when we see one. Hell, I've been to enough carnivals. I know how it works. Mike Gravel and Ron Paul are shills. They're both meaningless. They both take a position or two out of a possible 80 that rings the chimes of desperate anti-war Democrats, of desperate Democrats who will do it. Take my mother! Take anything, but please, Jesus, get rid of Bush! What's your name, Mike Gravel? Okay. What's your name, Ron Paul? Oh, I'll take you, too. Don't be fools. Please don't be fools or fooled. Senate Democrats yesterday, moved to cut off funding for Dick Cheney's office in this battle over whether he's got to comply with the law. Can you believe I just said that? Well, I did. A Senate Appropriations panel headed by Senator Dick Durbin refused to fund almost $5 million in the vice president's budget until Cheney's office complies with parts of an executive order governing its handling of classified information. The cut came on a 5-4 vote along party lines to fund White House operations, the Treasury Department, and many smaller agencies. So I guess, unless they change it today, Dick Cheney's going to have to go get a job. Oh, God, no. Oh, please. Oh, no. That means there'll be hundreds of thousands more people die around the globe. Oh, there he goes again. When's his pacemaker operation, Kathy? This month? Or is it in August? Is it this month? Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, Nam-myoho Renge. Now, I guess you can't do that. I guess you can't use Buddha's chants to focus lightning bolts someplace else, right? Regarding all the comments from McCain and the psychopathic Joe Lieberman, oh, is this guy starting to push me over the edge. I mean, Joe Lieberman, can you imagine? See, a lot of people say, well, how can you support Al Gore? He picked Joe Lieberman. No, he didn't pick Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman was picked by the DLC. Al Gore and Joe Lieberman are about as similar in their politics as, oh, I don't know, pick somebody, George Bush and Adolf Hitler. Okay, wrong comparison. But you know what I'm saying. Lieberman, what a snake this guy turned out to be, huh? Anyway, Lieberman and McCain and the rest of these people go to Iraq and they put on their body armor and they have jets fly overhead and a regiment of soldiers following them through the streets, fully locked and loaded, waiting for anything. This is after they've swept the streets clean with armored personnel carriers and RPGs, and these two half-wits come back and say, well, everything's fine in Iraq. Everything's working. We're winning. It's cool, man. I went into a little stall and bought a rug. I only paid $2 for it. It must have been worth $7,000, but they like me because I'm an American senator. Then there's this. The headline says, U.S. lawmakers prevented from leaving the green zone. The story, a six-member congressional delegation recently returned from a seven-day trip that included stops in Ireland, Germany, Pakistan, Kuwait, and Iraq. While in Iraq, security conditions prevented them from meeting any Iraqis, prevented them from leaving the green zone, and prevented them from staying in Iraq overnight. Additionally, the congressional members were required to wear full body armor, including Kevlar helmets, during the entire trip. And on the Senate floor yesterday, Joe Lieberman said the proposals to withdraw troops and restore the strength of the armed forces are legislating a defeat in Iraq. Lieberman, you son of a bitch, we've had enough of you! Go become a Republican, you snake! You smelly old man! Yesterday afternoon on CNN, responding to Lieberman's criticisms, Senator James Webb, naval veteran, reminded the public that he was warning in September 2002 that we were heading for trouble if we went to war in Iraq. He said, quote, I don't know where Senator Lieberman gets his opinions about how well we're doing. You have a government, continuing the quote, in Iraq that has no power. It cannot compel action. It's surrounded by armed factions that retain the power. This is not a situation we're going to resolve. And that's what I've been saying for 3 years. Now, as you know, Webb, along with Chuck Hagel, were sponsoring an amendment that would restore the strength of the military that Bush and Cheney and Chertoff and Negroponte and Abrams and the rest of these filthy, murderous Republicans have destroyed by requiring every soldier who's deployed overseas to receive at least the same amount of rest when they return home. And the Republicans said, no! Hell no! We want them in there constantly. We don't give a damn. We're Republicans. What are you talking about here? A bunch of Negroes, a few Puerto Ricans, and some dumb white people? Get them back over there. We don't care. No, that's not my opinion of the U.S. military. That's the Republican Party's opinion. Lawrence Korb, former Assistant Secretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan, said, regardless of whether a member supports a phased withdrawal of American forces from Iraq or continues to support President Bush's latest escalation, he or she should support this Webb-Hagel amendment. It takes 2 full years at home. After 1 year deployment for a union to become fully combat ready, spending a year at home after a year in the combat zone is barely enough time to get themselves marginally ready physically and mentally for the next deployment. Giving them last time would mean sending units and individuals into battle who are not combat ready. Sending people back for another tour without the same amount of time at home as the length of their tour is wrong, strategically and morally. Lawrence Korb, Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So regarding the Chuck Hagel, Jim Webb amendment to, what happened today, seven Republicans joined with the Democrats in supporting their proposal to give American troops more time between their deployments. But guess what? The filthy, disgusting, worm-eaten Republicans did not join the Democrats to the extent of providing the 60 votes needed to advance this debate on Iraq. According to the Times, Jim Webb and Chuck Hagel sponsored an amendment which could effectively limit the number of troops deemed ready for deployment. The senators, both combat veterans, said the men and women in the military should be given the same amount of time at home that they serve overseas. No, I'm sorry, guys, not when they are being ordered into the death machine by two filthy, rat-eaten cowards, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, who between the two of them twisted every single law they could get their hands on to avoid combat, to avoid active duty. God, these people are disgusting. After more than a day of debate, the Webb-Hagel proposal effectively died when the Senate voted 56-41 to cut off the debate, four votes short, needed to move forward. Senate Republicans had threatened to filibuster and used procedural maneuvers to derail the bill. Harry Reid, Senator, Nevada Democrat Majority Leader, said the military had been stretched too thin as the war in Iraq extended into its fifth summer. He said, quote, our troops are not machines. They are human beings, end quote. Senator Reid, you know that. I know that. Republicans don't know that. Republicans spit on the troops. Republicans in Congress urinate on them. Dick Cheney and George Bush defecate on them. Only use them for props. George Bush and Dick Cheney are to the military what voracious termites are to your house. Thugs. Monsters, these two, huh?
Republican opponents of Harry Reid said that Congress had no business dictating how long troops should be deployed and suggested Democrats were simply trying to score political points from an unpopular war.
Senator Lindsey Graham, who was in the Judge Advocate General's office, I believe that's how he avoided service action. Wasn't he a naval lawyer or something? Lindsey Graham said, the best thing we can do for our troops is to win. We're playing yo-yo with people's lives. Listen to what you're saying, you smarmy little rat. Listen to what you're saying. The Republican support for the proposal, what was it, seven Republicans, was stronger than the Bush crime family had hoped. Senator Carl Levin, Michigan Democrat, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, formally presented his amendment today calling for a troop withdrawal to begin with within 120 days of the legislation's passage, with a firm deadline of April 30 next year. The plan has gained the support of two Republicans, Gordon Smith of Oregon, Olympia Snow of Maine, both of whom supported the Webb Amendment today. Hagel said he intended to support the plan. Withdrawal. Begin withdrawal in 120 days. 4 months. Other Republicans who backed imposing a debate limit on the Webb Amendment were Senators Norm Coleman, Susan Collins, John Sununu, John Warner. No Democrats voted against it. And Bob Casey, Senator, Democrat from Pennsylvania, when it was his turn to go to the floor and give a speech, he delivered neither support nor criticism. His votes, he said, will be to change course in Iraq, but here's what he did. He read a roll call of the 169 men and women from Pennsylvania who had been murdered by George Bush and Dick Cheney in Iraq. The chamber was silent as he slowly ticked through their names and hometowns, a list that spanned the alphabet from Aliquippa to Youngsville. And the Republicans, these piggish, worm-eaten Republicans, they don't care about America's troops. They never have. They don't care about the military. They never have. They are cowards. Every last one of these Republicans who voted against this is a filthy, draft-dodging, sneaky, lying coward. But you knew that. Oh, God, I hate them. Let's take a call here real quick. Eddie, excuse me, Eddie is calling from San Jose, listening on the Quake. Hey, Eddie, welcome to the program. Hey, Eddie. Eddie! Okay, put him on hold. We'll try again. The other callers here would like to comment on Gravel. We'll do that when we come back after the break. Let's take Scott real quick, who's calling from Little Rock, Arkansas, listening via the Internet. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Mike. I just had a couple points very quickly. But first of all, I want to thank you and Tom Hartman for keeping me sane during these last 6 years. I saw Sicko yesterday.
Oh, yeah? I haven't seen it yet.
It is an incredible film. I would say it's probably Michael Moore's best film to date. I got in late. I got about 25 minutes into the movie. Of course, I stayed over till the next showing so I could see the whole thing. But I got into at a point where this woman was crying because her husband had died because they couldn't pay the premiums on the insurance.
Scott, let me put you on hold for a second, okay? We'll do the break, then we'll come back because I would like to hear what you've got to say. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. The hour. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. And we thank you for that. This is the Malloy Program. SK writes, regarding all the gut feelings that of the devil Michael Chertoff is having, and the reports coming from Pakistan via Newsweek and MSNBC and Michael Isikoff, that something big is about to happen. Big, I tell you! SK writes, I'm convinced that they're leaking purposeful BS video around the clock to manipulate the masses. Just look at the volume of recently released, quote, official, end quote, videos. They're trying a media blast technique, an overflow, if you will. They're trying to obfuscate and distort the information of real value that is beginning to surface. Apathy is officially no longer an option. Okay. Not that it ever was, right, SK? I usually just give... wait a minute. We had Scott on hold, didn't we? Oh, God, Scott. Almost headed for the woods here. Thanks for having me on. Okay, now about Sicko.
That's all right. I have a lot of things on my mind. I'm going to try to be as brief as possible.
Go ahead.
But in the movie Sicko, though, it was directed at people who have insurance but are denied for one reason or another and are sent to the poorhouse, because of the way our American system of health care works, and the examples from England and Cuba and France and you know, nobody pays a dime for health care. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. It's just accepted as a part of their way of life. And people live a lot better in those environments because they don't wind up paying as much as we pay, you know, out the butt, you know, for insurance in this country.
Very simple way to fund single-payer health care, and that is, first of all, destroy every single insurance company that handles health care. I mean, literally destroy them, declare them persona non grata on the trading floors of the various stock exchanges. Just turn them out. Secondly, 30% tax across the board on corporate profits, period. End of story. There's all the, one last thing. No more Iraq war. And there's the funding for every single American for the foreseeable future of complete, absolute, up and down, everything included health care.
Two more brief comments.
Sure.
I'm going to say this, and then I'll listen to what you have to say. But I find it really astounding that 41% still believe that Saddam Hussein was connected with 9/11. You know, after doing just a week of research after, you know, at the very, very beginning when they first started talking about all this crap, you know, I realized that there was no connection. And that's why I'm against this war. And if that's not a war crime, I don't know what is. And it seems like right now we're just bombarded by Anna Nicole Smith, Paris, Brittany, Lindsay Lohan, Anna Nicole still, and American Idol. And this is in print and TV, and the average American's brains have turned to mush.
Absolutely.
It just makes me sick.
Right. And what was Mike Gravel talking about last night? Going to those average Americans to use direct democracy. Oh, yeah, that'll work.
Thanks, Mike. I enjoy listening to your
show. All right,
show.
Scott, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Take care. Bush said shortly after 9/11 that he had hit the trifecta. You think he was kidding? You think that was a throwaway line? The country was attacked based on either total incompetency on his administration's part or assistance on his administration's part. One way or the other. It cannot be anything else. What were the other two things, Kathy, that made him feel like he'd hit the trifecta? It was so long ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was something about a national emergency, an attack on America,
The business community, NASDAQ had collapsed. Yeah, the recession.
Right. And that would enable him to dip into the Social Security Trust Fund. That's when he said, I hit the trifecta.
To constantly bombard the American public with 9/11 in Iraq is to demonstrate just repeatedly the venality of George W. Bush and his thugs, the lies, the deceit, the horrible, horrible leadership, if that's what you want to call it, these people are providing. Again, after we were attacked on 9/11, the same effort should have been made in rounding these people up as was made during the Clinton administration to round up the people who blew up the embassies in Africa. They were caught. Who blew up blow up the Trade Center the first time. They were caught. As far as the Trade Center is concerned, those people now are serving time in prison. But, of course, how many Americans know that? How many Americans, you know where they're serving time? At the Supermax prison where they hold people like Kaczynski. But there they sit for the rest of their lives. And what did George Bush do? This cowardly little man. He took the deaths of 3,000 people and turned it into something that would benefit him, that would benefit his administration, would benefit the Republican Party and the conservatives and the lying, stinking people who are destroying this country. That's what he did. I feel it in my gut. Something is going to happen this summer. Doon, 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 doon. All right, let's take a few of these calls about Gravel, and I've got a couple other topics I do want to get to. So we'll start with Robert, who's in Daly City, California, listening on The Quake. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Mike. Hey, you know that Mike Gravel story that you were, the guy you were talking to last night, I felt so dirty I had to have a bath.
The what?
I mean, I said I felt so dirty I had to have a bath.
I hear that. I hear that. Did you get the feeling that he saw you and me and everybody else as just, oh, I don't know, uneducated morons, and he was going to explain things to us in his inimitable way?
Yeah, he's a political animal, all right. The double talk, I spent 4 minutes on the line with Dr. Bill Wattenberg. He's one of these Dr. Strangelove nuclear weapons guys, and I'll tell you, he did bad things to me online. But they totally reveal who they are and what they're up to, you know.
Yeah.
People have disabused themselves, and the guy, they won't talk about their political platform. But I'm telling you, there are people in the country that have already figured out how to get back on greenbacks. So, you know, I've got a United States notes and, get the economy back in the under the constitutional government. So there's a lot of good things happening, but I don't trust most people in Washington to be there for us. I trust the people like on 9/11 that showed up, you know, to dig people out of that mess. We've got proof 9/11 was a controlled demolition. I mean, you just go to 911weknow.com and look at 9/11 mysteries. We've got the actual severed 48 inner core columns. They're severed. You can see them severed. Their pictures were taken, and they were delivered to the researchers. So why are they
lying? Yeah, I understand. It all ties together, Robert. It really does. And I think the essential issue is what occurred in this country on 9/11. It really is. But I'll tell you something else. One of the reasons anyone who listens to this program on a regular basis knows where I stand on that issue. I've said it over and over and over and over again. I will never, until as I draw my last breath, if there's any consciousness there, I will not accept what these lying bastards in the Bush crime family tried to convince the American public of what occurred on September 11, 2001. But here's the other thing. The reason I don't talk about it a lot is because what's the point? The people who understand what happened on 9/11 understand what happened on 9/11. The people who understand the lies and deceptions around that issue understand the lies and deceptions. And I don't know if we're going to convince anyone else. I'm certainly willing to broadcast the websites where people can go to get the information. But until the Congress of the United States, on some level, sometime, decides to hold hearings to try to get to the truth. And I'm not talking about commissions. I'm talking about members of Congress who throw all the caution to the winds and say, okay, we need to find out what happened. And you know when that's going to occur? Either never or a long, long time from now. And you know why? Because the American public could not handle the truth.
How much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. We haven't seen it yet. We're going to see it. Zeitgeistmovie.com. If you haven't seen it, Zeitgeist movie. Zeitgeistmovie.com. I just keep getting emails from people saying, you've got to see this film, you've got to see this film. So apparently you can get it at zeitgeistmovie.com. Check it out. We certainly will. Back to your phone calls. Peter is calling from Long Island, listening on the Internet. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mr. Mike Malloy, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Peter?
Listen, I'm listening to your program, you know, and I don't like what you're talking about, my boy, Mr. George W. Bush, man.
Your boy?
That's right.
Yeah,
but
how should I talk about him?
Well, you know, you're saying that his administration are a bunch of thugs and that 9/11 was controlled demolition.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
That's BS, and you know it. You're too smart for that.
Oh, it is? It is BS? It's not true, huh?
It's absolutely not
true. Have you checked it out, or you just have your head filled with Sean Hannity nonsense?
Yeah, I know. He's from where he lives, like a few miles from where I live.
Yeah, like I care. But I ask you a question. Have you checked it out yourself, or do you just sit back on your ass and listen to Sean Hannity? Which
I
is
don't
it?
Have to check it out because I know it's...
Ah, you've got a crystal ball. You know the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Oh, my God. I think that is just wonderful, Peter. Good for you. Goodbye, Peter. Oh, my God. Hey, meet the Mike Malloy. Oh, stop. Blake is calling from Kokomo, Indiana. Blake, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I was just going to mention that you kind of took Mike Gravel to the woodshed yesterday.
Not really. He took himself. He took himself. All I did was sit here and let this apparently insane man ramble on and never once give me a coherent, comprehensive answer. If that's taking somebody to task or taking the woodshed, oh, my God, you've never heard me take someone to the woodshed. I gave Mike Gravel every possible chance to just speak plain English. If he wants to be president, he's going to have to learn to speak plain English so that common folk like me can understand him.
Well, he's trying to make a point of a real revolution of changing the tax system.
No, he's not. What he's talking about is an old libertarian idea that just won't die, that is all over Neil Bortz, one of the most asinine right-wing. He wrote a book with John Linder, a right-wing member of Congress. And I know Neil Bortz very well, and Neil Bortz is an incipient Nazi. And Bortz's book is about the flat national sales tax or a flat tax, take your pick. A national sales tax is regressive, regardless of what Gravel said. We are a republic, regardless of what Gravel said. Direct democracy is mob rule, regardless of what Gravel said. The conclusion I came to about Michael Gravel, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
So you think that all European nations that have this are just retarded or what?
The what?
You think?
What are you talking about? Which European nation? What are you talking about?
I know that, what is it? Isn't it France or Germany that has this kind of deal?
That has what kind of deal?
Where they do have a basis of their tax system on retail sales.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Come on, be specific. Are you going to pull a Gravel on me? What are you talking about? Be specific. Can you?
No, you can't.
All right, well, you what?
Okay,
go ahead, Blake.
I don't know that well, but...
Then why are you trying to cite it as an example to bolster your argument if you don't know what you're talking about? Come on, Blake, for Christ's sake. All right, stop. What you have to do, Blake, is fill your head with some facts, not some rhetorical nonsense from whatever right-winger, and that's exactly what Gravel is, who comes along and whispers in your ear. Now stop it, Blake. You're a better man than that. You're like most of us. You want to know the truth, and the first jackass that comes along sounding like he's speaking the truth, we usually go for. Don't do it, Blake, and don't call this program citing something as an example unless you can explain your example to me. Now, that's fair, isn't it?
That was much like the entire Gravel interview last night, and we had another caller last night that called in after the interview, and he said, well, Gravel's right, but I can't explain it why. It's hard for me to put it into words. It's just going to work because capital goes where capital wants to be. Didn't make a damn bit of sense either.
Yeah, well, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll take a few more of these Gravel calls, and we want to play some of these moron sounds for you tonight. Okay, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I think I'm done. realize we'd get the trifecta.
Yeah, there it is.
Hey, we love you, George. Trifecta.
Oh, God, these people, huh? All right. Speaking of hitting the trifecta, we got a trifecta for you. We're going to play some moron sounds for you now. This is Bush speaking in Cleveland yesterday before he spoke about his ongoing illegal occupation and massacre in Iraq. Bush got all warm and fuzzy about alternative sources of energy like burning corn and lots of wind and hydrogen water driblets. It's the same recycled piece of drivel that you and I have been listening to for how long now. George Bush, interested in something other than oil, is like a Dracula interested in something other than blood. There is no way. But it's always fun to listen, so here we go.
One of the reasons I've come to Cleveland is to herald some of the new technologies. As a matter of fact, a fellow came up to me at this place, and he said, "Now, you're a wind person." I said, "Well, you know, a lot of hot air here." And he said, We got new industry evolving here. Windmills. That's fine. You know, I support that.
Yeah, I do.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
It makes us less dependent on foreign sources of oil.
Yeah.
And that's an important for making sure this economy continues to grow.
That's an important what? You left off the noun. That's an important what? Oh, God. A lost noun. Where is it? Is it over here? Where's the lost noun? That's an important for making sure this... Hello, where's the lost noun? Windmills. That's new. Yeah. Sancho Panza, to the contrary, notwithstanding. Don Quixote, never mind. Windmills, that's something new! Damn! Who invented them?
I think it was the Swiss, Mike. The Swiss.
I thought I got rid of you last night. Now the supreme environmentalist waxes poetic on hydrogen-fueled automobiles. Just for giggles, here's Mensa Man.
And but the one of the issues to make sure that we continue to grow strong in the years to come is energy.
Really?
Today I went to a fascinating little company here that is building hydrogen fuel cells.
Uh-huh.
Hydrogen is the input, water is the output, and in the meantime your car is going.
Well, damn!
Hydrogen fuel cells are coming.
Are they?
Imagine one day being able to drive your car
yeah.
with hydrogen as its power source and water driblets as the output of your engine. And that day's coming.
It's coming. As surely as God made little green apples, you're going to have water driblets coming out of the back of your exhaust pipe. Yeah. Last bit of fun and frivolity before we turn to the serious issue of his ongoing delusion of victory in Iraq and his great fun in murdering people there. This time, Chuckle Nuts got all verklempt about the poor pig farmers who need corn, too. So we can't burn it all in our cars. You know, those cars out there by the curb. The ones that burn corn and switchgrass and the pencil shavings and used leftover hair. Here's your president.
When it comes to powering your cars, I want to tell you I'm a big believer in having our farmers grow a product that will enable us to drive our cars.
Sure you are.
I think it makes sense to spend your money
yeah.
to invest in new technology,
like
or to research new technology.
Like stem cell research,
so that
racer,
when a
fellow yeah.
grows switchgrass, for
yeah.
that grass can be processed into ethanol, which can power your automobile.
Like hydrogen.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
If you're interested about energy independence, because that energy is coming from corn growers here in America.
Oh.
The problem is we're growing a lot of corn for ethanol, which means the price of corn is going up for the pig farmer. So we got to relieve the pressure on the pig farmer by, well, not all, everybody, you know, but pig farmers use a lot of corn.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is that funny? Call up Mark Maron. Ask Mark Maron if that's funny stuff. Is that funny stuff? Mark would know. Stephanie would know. Call Stephanie.
Just come out, Mike. Be proud. Wear a gay sweater.
Wear a gay sweater? I've got so many gay sweaters, I can open up my own boutique. I love gay sweaters. Oh, my God, I love gay sweaters. Now the conversation turns to Bush's bloody and illegal terror wars. Oh, and 9/11, of course, because they are inextricably linked, lest we forget. And those damned oceans that fail to protect us. True. Here, Bush regrets that he has to give us some bad news. Brace yourself. Are you ready? Get ready for it. Here it is. We're at war.
I want to talk about this war we're in. First of all, I regret I had to tell you right in war.
Really?
I never wanted to be a war president.
You were thrilled.
Now that I am one,
like Churchill,
I'm gonna do the best I can to protect America.
When does that start?
My mind changed on September the 11th, 2001.
Uh-huh.
It changed because I realized the biggest responsibility government has is to protect the American people from further attack.
Oh, thank you, George.
It's one of the really valuable lessons of September the 11th.
Yeah.
Is to recognize that oceans can't protect us.
They can't? Well, I think we learned that on December 7th, 1941, didn't we? Oh, God, thanks for the news flash there, Chuckle Nuts. All right, file this clip under, you got to be kidding me, right? Here Bush describes how he's helping to spread liberty and freedom and light throughout Iraq. Well, okay, the bombs and flesh-eroding white phosphorus dust do give off some light. I guess he's not totally wrong here.
The long-term strategy has got to be one that marginalizes these extremists and radicals by promoting an alternative ideology.
Oh, I like
that. I like to say an ideology based on light.
On light.
An ideology that promotes hope.
Oh.
An ideology, when given a chance, has worked every time to lift people's spirits.
Yeah, because it makes them
dead. And
that's
the ideology based upon liberty.
Liberty.
The chance for people to live in a free and open society.
Those that survive, that is. And those whose family members survive. And so your ideology that promotes hope. So let me get this straight. By killing and maiming them, we're spreading light and hope. I got it. Damn, George. I'm sorry. I'm a little slow.
Kind of like the Katrina victims.
Yeah, the Katrina
light
victims.
And hope.
Light and hope. Yeah, okay. Almost done with these in case you're banging your head into a blunt object. Hold on. Here comes the part of the speech about that hard work. Takes a lot of hard work to kill innocent people and steal their oil. Hard work. And you know, rob their banks and stuff. It's tough. Of course, it's those damn TV screens again. If we could just stop the oceans and the television screens... Maybe we could finally live in peace.
And it's hard work, you know. War is on a multiple of fronts.
Multiples.
One front is Afghanistan. And the front that is consuming the American people right now is Iraq.
Literally.
And I fully understand how tough it is on our psyche.
Our psyche?
I fully understand that when you watch the violence on TV every night, people are saying, is it worth it?
Is it worth it?
Can we accomplish an objective?
Can we accomplish
Well, first I want to tell you, yes, we can accomplish and win this fight in Iraq.
No, I'm not delusional. We can accomplish it and win this fight in Iraq. Yeah, it's very simple. You know, we just send our army after their army, and they do have an army, don't they? Oh, wait a minute. Their army is on. We're trying to train. No, wait. The objective is to. No, wait a second. It was to overthrow. No, he's gone. We hanged him. No, it's the bath. No, debathificate. No, the oil. No, the oil. Weapons. That's right. That's the ticket. Let's see now. What are we here for? Oh, that's right, to establish democracy. That's why I'm killing all these American servicemen and women, which I have to admit is not all that difficult to do. Last one here, and it's a doozy. Here Bush explains why Congress needs to continue unlimited funding of this slaughter. No questions, no plan for withdrawal, because, wait for it, we just got started. Funny, it feels like it's been years. And besides, the American people want this war to continue.
I listened to the commanders that would be running the operation. In this case, the main man is a man named General David Petraeus.
Oh, really?
Smart, capable man. And we just started. He got all the troops there a couple of weeks ago. He asked for 20-something thousand troops, and I said, if that's what you need, Commander, that's what you got. And they just showed up.
They just showed up.
And in Washington, you got people saying, stop. And here's my attitude about this. I believe that it's in this nation's interest to give the commander a chance to fully implement his operations.
Oh,
and I believe Congress ought to wait for General Petraeus to come back and give us assessment
of
the strategy that he's putting in place before they make any decisions.
Ah.
That's what the American people expect.
Really?
They expect for military people to come back and tell us how the military operations are going. And that's the way I'm going to play it as the commander-in-chief.
That's why I'm going to play it as the commander-in-chief. I'm a commander-in-chief. That's why I'm going to play it. I'm just going to play it that way because I'm the commander-in-chief. I'm the decider. By Jesus in heaven, I'm the decider. That's how I'm going to play it. I'm going to play it that way. I'm going to find me a commander that will tell me what I want to hear. If I have to go through 30 of those sons of bitches with all them stars on their shoulders, I'm not impressing them stars. I'm the decider. I'm the commander-in-chief. That's me. That's the way I'm going to play it. The American people expect me to play that way because I'm a war president. I'm a leader. I'm a leader. By God, I'm a leader. Huh? Hey, Dick, I'm a leader, right? Condi? I'm a leader. Somebody?
I'm a leader.
I am the egghead.
I'm a leader.
I'm the commander.
I'm a leader.
I'm the decider.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Now, I absolutely believe that America is going to make some right choices in life.
Yeah. Couple of comments here from listeners via email about those sound bites we played. This is from Waimea, who says, George Bush promoting light, liberty, and hope is the same as supporting dictatorial regimes in Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, etc. Yeah, you know, he talks about it all the time because he's a greedy, ignorant little twit who is doing what his oil masters and his power mad masters tell him to do. But he talks about he wants to promote liberty and light. How about starting with your business partners in Saudi Arabia? And when you're finished with that, just go a little bit over there, just across the Persian Gulf to Kuwait. And when you finish with that, go to your friends over in Egypt who like to torture the people that you send to them. And when you finish with that, go to the United Arab Emirates where, let me see, who gets to vote over there? Anybody? No? Okay. What an ignorant little man. Or he thinks we are. And, of course, 60% of us are. 70? Okay, 80. And this is from Prairie 2. Subject line says, what pig farmers? You know, Bush is concerned about the pig farmers. Hey, Mike, under the last 12 years of Republican farm bills, corporate ownership of pig farms has gone from 3% to 97%. Chucklenuts might as well be worried about unicorn herders. That's a compassionate conservative for you, concerned about people they have long ago run out of business. Unicorn herders. And did you see the story tonight on, I'm sorry, I did. ABC and NBC, I watched some of it. Oh, God. Get this. Congressional investigators set up a bogus company with only a post office box. And within a month, in West Virginia, I think, within a month obtained a license from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that allowed them to buy enough radioactive material for a small, dirty bomb. Senator Norm Coleman, Republican of Minnesota, who will ask the NRC, National Regulatory Commission, about the incident at a Senate hearing tomorrow, said this incident raises concerns about terrorists obtaining such material just as easily. Nobody at the NRC checked whether the company was legitimate. And an agency official even helped the undercover investigators fill in the application form. This is the Bush crime family for you. Oh, my God! You want some radioactive material? Oh,
Oh, okay. What's the name of your company? Acme Radioactive Material Getting Company. Oh, okay. And what's your address? P.O. Box 666 in Huntington, West Virginia. Okay. Here are the forms. What? You only speak Arabic? All right. Here, we'll fill them in for you. No problem.
NRC Commissioner Edward McGaffigan said today,
okay, more checking is needed when we do this, but we fixed the problem.
Licenses now will require visits to the company, or in some cases, the company officials will have to come to us. Of course, for the past 6 years,
we have no freaking idea who has gotten radioactive material from us. Well, kind of from us, because we licensed them.
We fixed the problem, Mr. McGaffigan said. Oh, my God. The license that was obtained by the undercover people allowed for the purchase of portable moisture density gauges, widely used in construction, in which are encased amounts of cesium-137, americium-241, two highly radioactive isotopes. Oh, my God.
We fixed the problem, though. Eddie, you're doing a heck of a job. You really are, Eddie. You see what I've been saying? I don't toot my own horn. I never do. But Jesus H. God, for the past 5 years, what have we talked about on this program, Kathy? Every single regulatory agency, from the Farm Bureau to the Nuclear Regulatory Agency, has been totally prostituted and turned into a 10-cent whore, no offense to sex workers, by this filthy, corrupt Bush administration. Everything, the Justice Department, the Defense Department, the Nuclear Regulatory, the Education Department, the Surgeon General, the Environmental Protection, every single agency is infested with and corrupted by corporate animals, piss ants, Bush cronies, and now this.
You need some help filling in that application, since all you speak is... What kind of Arabic do you speak? Do you speak Saudi Arabic, or do you speak Kuwaiti Arabic? Just checking. No offense.
This is where we are. Bush. Bush and these filthy traitors who now run this country. They have given it to the enemy. Who's the enemy? Right now, thanks to them, everybody else on the planet is the enemy. Tell me a country that wouldn't, if given a chance, push a button and make all of us disappear. Tell me a country. Tell me one. Go ahead. Switzerland? back, 7 past the hour. Don't forget, Sam Cedar will be filling in for me tomorrow night. And Friday night, I'll be back on the air, but I'll be doing the program from the studios of KPTK in Seattle. And on Saturday night, the big gig, town hall meeting, that will include all sorts of talk show hosts for your listening pleasure. So hope you're going to be there live and in living color. It'll be web streamed and what else? Podcasted and all sorts of things. And since it is coming through KPTK's website, I think it's all free. Everything is free, right? Okay. When they introduce me, I think I'm going to come out naked. All right? Just, you know, then I can make it onto Keith Olbermann's program. Did you hear about this talk show host in Seattle? Came out naked. Sal and Dana Point, in answer to the question, the country that wouldn't push the button to make us disappear might be China. We're too much of a cash cow, or is that a cash pig, for them right now. But we won't be after we go bankrupt. So even that probably won't last. All right, I'll go for that, Sal, instead of Switzerland. And this from Dean in Connecticut, a quick thought about libertarianism, because, you know, we kind of touched on it. We're talking about right-wing libertarianism. I don't have too much of a problem with left-wing libertarianism, because as far as I know, and again, I'm going to display my ignorance here, so please don't correct me. I don't know. Just let me wander around in my ignorance. But left-wing libertarianism, or left libertarianism, is more libertarianism in the sense of individual rights and responsibilities. You know, you don't legislate against same-sex relationships. You don't... You don't tell people they can't visit a sex worker if they want to. That sort of thing. And it's more than that. So you don't tell people they can't smoke a joint. You don't tell people that, it just goes on and on. So to me, right-wing libertarianism is Nazism. Left-wing libertarianism is fun. Anyway, Dean in Connecticut writes, a quick thought about libertarianism. If the recent rash of defective products from China is not conclusive proof that the libertarian idea of no government regulation is BS, I'd like to know what is. That's very true. Yeah, no regulations, because you see, the market will decide. If they put a product out and 30 children die, well, then the consumer is supposed to learn from that and say, oh, my children didn't die. My sister's children all died, but mine didn't, because we didn't eat gravel bars. So we're not going to eat the gravel bars, and hopefully they'll take them off the market. God. Now, I bring this up For obvious reasons, about Senator David Vitter, a leading Christian social conservative. He said he had sinned. He was on the list of phone numbers. His phone number was on the list of the D.C. madam. We mentioned this the other night. This is and he went public and said he had sinned and that God took time out from creating universes and came down to visit, or didn't come down, but sent a special message via UPS to David Vitter that said, okay, David, I forgive you. You went and broke one of my major commandments. But so did Solomon, and so did David, and so did just about everybody else. So I forgive you, David. Plus, he said his wife forgave him. His wife, on the other hand, says she would like to duel Lorena Bobbitt. She's no Hillary Clinton. I'll come at that some bitch with a pair of hedge trimmers. Ooh. So, you know, Louisiana senator, Republican, Christian conservative, social conservative, leading Christian social conservative, who has been whoring around on his wife and his family while he talks the good story about, my marriage would not survive a queers get married. I can't have a queers get married, because if a queers get married, oh, Jesus, the whole social structure is going to collapse. Of course, I can go get me a little strange when I want to, but as long as I do it with a woman, thank you, Jesus. Well, there's more to the story. Or as Paul Harvey would say when he's finished with his horse, and now the rest of the story. And that is, way back, way back in 2004, a member of the Louisiana Republican State Central Committee. Doesn't that sound so Soviet? Vincent Bruno, a member of the Louisiana Republican State Committee, said that that Bitter should resign for his own good, the good of the party, and the good of his family. Now, back in 2004, Vincent Bruno accused Mr. Bitter of having an affair with a New Orleans prostitute. You see, in a radio interview at the time, Senator Bitter, actually he was a representative, called the allegation absolutely and untrue, completely untrue. And his supporters said Mr. Bruno was conducting a political vendetta. Why, of course. Trying to shift focus away from the terrorists. Of course. But yesterday, Jeanette Meyer, a former madam, told the Associated Press that Bitter had been a customer of her New Orleans brothel. And back in 2002, Ms. Meyer pleaded guilty to running an illegal establishment. So today, Bitter's office did not respond to an email and phone call seeking to comment on the latest allegation. However, in the nation's cesspool, Washington, D.C., several Republican colleagues rallied to Bitter's side. Well, of course they would. Of course. Senator Jim DeMint, Republican of South Carolina, that Christian Senator Jim DeMint said, quote, it's really an issue between he and his family. No, sir, it's an issue between his family and him. Get it right. And God. And that it has been dealt with. God already dealt with it. Yeah, Senator Jim DeMint said. He's a very good friend. He's a great legislator, so certainly I accept his apology, and hopefully it won't have any effect on his service here. But by God, I wouldn't let my wife alone with him. No. Asked if the matter might undermine Bitter's reputation as a social conservative, Senator Jim DeMint, Republican of South Carolina, replied, well, yeah, that's part of being in leadership. If you fail to live up to standards you set for yourself, then obviously that hurts. No, you half-witted jackass, if you violate the law! That's what all of us fear most, that we're going to discredit ourselves and no longer be effective, said Republican Senator from South Carolina, Jim DeMint. Is that what they said about Clinton when it came out that Clinton got a little oral satisfaction? Well, actually, he didn't. If you remember the story in its entirety, because it was all out there on the Internet, he never did, you know, hit a home run. He only ever got to third base with Monica, right? I wonder if Jim DeMint, Republican of South Carolina, had the same kind of forgiving attitude about Bill Clinton. DeMint said, we all think we're not vulnerable to something like that happening, but the fact is, this can be a very lonely and isolating place to be away from your family. So I'm certainly not going to judge him because I don't want that kind of pressure on me. Really, Jim? What kind of pressure? So the reason I bring it up is because these people are disgusting in their hypocrisy, and they should be exposed. And now, there's more. Who's the guy? Bob Allen, a Republican, conservative, Christian, who represents District 32 in the Florida State House of Representatives, was arrested this afternoon at Veterans Memorial Park on East Broad Street. Little joke there. In Titusville, Florida. The park, you see, was under surveillance by a detail of undercover officers. Why? Well, there'd been some sexual activity there. Officers say they noticed Representative Allen acting suspicious as he went in and out and in and out and in and out of the men's restroom 3 times. Minutes later, he solicited an undercover male officer inside the restroom, offering to perform oral sex for $20. What? $20? Why, you tightwad! Officers realized he was a public figure after the arrest. Allen has been in the office since 2000 as he was taken away by the police. He said this was a very big misunderstanding. He also said this is disgusting.
He's a former Little League volunteer who donated time to the Boys and Girls Club, serving as board of directors. He's married and has a teenage daughter. Oh, no!
One way you can help is to find a child who needs somebody older in their life to say, I love you.
I really don't know love. I really don't know love at all.
This poor David Allen in Florida. You know, another example of the end result of all of us, well, not all of us, but in a public way, most Americans pretending that there is a proper way to love someone and an improper way. You see? So somebody like poor Mr. Allen, the representative from in Florida, poor Mr. Allen, since he, like, oh, I don't know what, 90% of the population of the United States has been inculcated with the wrong idea that there is a right way to love someone and a wrong way to love someone if you're an adult. I'm not talking about the love you feel for your children or your parents. That's, you know, pretty clear. Even, I've heard, gay people love their parents and their children. I don't know, though. That may just be a rumor. But because we have been told over and over by people like David Vitter that there is a right way and a not right way to love someone or to be in a relationship with someone, people like David Vitter or his Florida buddy, Mr. Allen, people like Mr. Allen have to sneak around to get their love or sex, whatever you want to call it, in a very surreptitious way. They have to pretend.
Well, I have a wife and four children, and this is disgusting.
That's what he said when he was arrested.
This is disgusting. No.
How sad. How sad. But David Vitter, and now it turns out it's on Wonkat.com. It's on Talking Points Memo.
When Republican Senator David Vitter rented prostitutes back home in New Orleans, there was more than sex. He liked the hookers to make him wear diapers.
Ooh, and I bet it wasn't because he's lost control of his bladder. He liked the hookers. See, this is the kind of stuff that you don't want to hear about. You just, it's like, ew, please. So Vitter had an astronaut fetish. Is that what it was? Diapers. Now, no offense to people who have to wear adult diapers. I mean, the older we get, the less control we have over some of our body functions, right? But I don't think David Vitter is at that point. I think he just wanted, kind of like British politicians who want to call their rented sex worker mommy and have mommy beat them right before mommy performs oral sex on them. Sort of like that, right? David Vitter, a leading social conservative, not merely a supporter of last year's proposed constitutional amendment to protect the sanctity of traditional marriages by amending our Constitution to ban same-sex marriages, but he was one of its chief sponsors. And not only was Vitter one of its chief sponsors, but he was also one of the nation's most extreme supporters of the amendment. You know what he said during last year's debate over the amendment to ban same-sex marriages?
I don't believe there's any issue that's more important than this one.
Really? Not a single one? Banning same-sex marriage is the most important issue there is in the United States? War, poverty, medical care, child abuse, spouse abuse, none of the... No? Taxes? No? No?
I don't believe there's any issue is more important than this one. God has stopped the queers from getting married.
Oh, my God. According to Mr. Vitter, he was speaking at a Lafayette Parish Republican Executive Committee luncheon. He referred to Hurricanes Katrina and Rita coming through the same area as a same-sex marriage. Here's what he said. In a statement at the luncheon, Mr. Vitter referred to the impact of both hurricanes on the Lafayette area. Unfortunately, it's the crossroads where Katrina meets Rita. I always knew us against same-sex unions. Get it? This is what the Religious Freedom Coalition said about Mr. Vitter in December 2003 when he announced he was running for the Senate.
A good friend of social conservatives, Republican Congressman David Vitter of Louisiana, has announced he will run for the seat being vacated by Senator Breaux. Congressman Vitter is pro-life and a true social conservative. And anything you hear in the future about his predisposition to diapers with a hole, no offense to sex workers, is not true.
When he was elected to the Senate, James Dobson's focus on the family celebrated his victory in its newsletter to its members announcing,
David Vitter, the Christian conservative, became the first Republican to win a Louisiana Senate seat since Reconstruction. Thank you, Jesus!
So still. Oh, how I feel, you're a king.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. I know. This is garbage about Vitter, senator who enjoys the company of sex workers. It's a garbage topic because of his public stance of being so self-righteous. Here's this. In Congress, Vitter became a reliable vote for the extreme right, earning a 100% rating from the American Conservative Union in 2002. He vowed to outlaw abortion in all cases, even when pregnancy results from rape or incense. He was against gambling, blah, 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 blah. But the interesting part, the guy he replaced, of course, was Bob Livingston. Remember Bob Livingston, who replaced Newt Gingrich? And Newt Gingrich, who resigned because of the tale of his adulterous affair with a government employee, an employee on the Agriculture Subcommittee, while Gingrich was assaulting Bill Clinton for Bill Clinton's little almost affair. Gingrich, a serial adulterer. I mean, this guy didn't care what it was. Show him a pile of rocks, and if he thought somebody was in there, he might go, well, never mind. But Vitter won a special election in 1999 to exceed a Republican congressman and once and very short-lived House Speaker Bob Livingston, who resigned after his adultery scandal. That's why this is a story. It's because of the blatant, cloying, gagging, filthy hypocrisy of these people. Whether it's about gay sex or not gay sex, it doesn't make any difference. The hypocrisy. They will do anything to invade a woman's right to privacy. They will do anything to stop two people who happen to be of the same sex from forming a loving, long-lasting relationship. And yet these rat bastards are nothing but hypocrites. Down to the core. And they get voted into office. And I'll bet you if Vitter runs again, he'll get reelected. Bridget writes, Mike, I swear to God, there is a direct correlation between the volume of self-righteous public condemnation of anything related to sexuality and the amount of totally kinky stuff they engage in privately. Show me someone making speeches about the sanctity of marriage or the importance of abstinence, and I'll show you someone who has hookers, no offense to sex workers, putting dog collars on them and making them eat kibbles from the bowl on the floor and barking! They're sick! And they kill people! Yes, they do. Mr. Vitter in his diapers. And he doesn't do it because he can't control his bladder or his rectum. He does it because,
beat me, I'm just a baby. Oh, beat me. Oh, wait a minute, I gotta go vote for more money to kill Iraqis. Hold on a minute.
Filthy pigs. Oh, and in a related item, it was reported on NBC the other night, the Bush crime family and thugs like Vitter and the rest of these people have so destroyed the social fabric such as it was in Iraq. Oh, yes, they had a nasty dictator. But they had a social fabric within which people were able to survive, unless they ran afoul of the dictator, in which case they would be rendered limb from limb by his psychopathic sons. But now what happens to young girls from Iraq? They go to Syria. Did you see that video report on NBC that came with a warning first of the young girls from Iraq who have gone to Syria, and they go to these, what shall we call them, nightclubs, where these very religious Muslim men sit there and watch the girls dance on the floor, just the girls, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, 10 years old, in belly dancer outfits, and the girls hope that they will be invited. No, they don't hope. They something that they'll be invited to share the company of the good Muslim men, like good Christian men who are waiting to give them money for their company. This is what the Bush crime family has done to teenage girls and young women in Iraq. They have fled. There is nothing left for them in their country. There are no jobs. There's no stability. There's nothing but death and blood and gore and mud and filth and excrement and urine and disease and poison. So they go to Syria, where entrepreneurial young Syrian men open up faux whorehouses. No offense to sex workers. Where the girls dance, hoping that someone will call them to the table and offer them a hit off the hookah and say, hey, listen, you want to get together? Hypocrites, Christian, Muslim, I don't give a damn. You hypocritical bastards. Ah, but we're pro-life, and we promote freedom, and liberty, and switchgrass, and driblets coming out of the tailpipe of your car. I'm George Bush. I'm the decider. I'm Mike Malloy, and I want to get to some phone calls here, okay? Charles has been holding on forever from Boston, listening on the internet. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Good morning, or good night, rather. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Charles.
I'm still surviving from your guest last night. I think we actually found someone who's even crazier than Lyndon LaRoche.
I think so. And I got an email tonight from somebody that said it was so bad he started making George Bush sound coherent.
Well, it must have been like talking to a brick wall, because he kept talking over you and he didn't answer any of your questions.
Not a single one. No.
You know,
I got emails from people today that said I was talking over him and wouldn't allow him to answer.
Well, they got it backwards.
You really
kept your cool, because he took on an adversarial tone from the very beginning, and I don't know how you kept your cool for so long.
But well, you know, I don't mind an adversarial tone, even from a fake Democrat. But what I do mind, and what I won't tolerate, is a condescending, patronizing attitude from someone who displays that attitude simply because I'm, you know, trying to provide them mm-hmm. some publicity or a platform on which they can state their case about why they want to be president of the United States.
Yeah.
That drives me insane. I used to get that from Republicans, and now I get it from fake Democrats, which that figures.
Wow. It's
history, though. That's right.
Actually, the thing I wanted to talk about was the fear-mongering of the right, and I think there's no shock about this. This fear-mongering is basically a tactic the right wing has used everywhere throughout the world. I mean, just look at the Nazis, the way they would use fear to keep people in line. Look at organized...
That's where this idea came from.
Yeah,
it's right out of the Joseph Goebbels playbook. Absolutely.
And you know, we're at a point more and more people are realizing what a horrible mistake the war is. And, of course, when the press picks up on this, suddenly there's a new terror alert, and we're told, there may be a terrorist attack on the horizon. So, again, fear is used to keep dissent at a minimum. I'm just concerned what's going to happen between now and the election. Of course, I don't want to be a fearmonger now, but, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if Bush does something to extend his term in office.
Nor would I. Nor would a lot of people. This crime family. Look, it's not paranoia. It's not tinfoil hat stuff, Charles. This is a crime family that lied us into a war that has cost the deaths of several hundred thousand people and the maiming of uncountable numbers of Iraqis and Americans. This is an organization that has staffed every single regulatory agency in the United States with shills for the industries they're supposed to regulate. This organization would lie to us, would set up an attack like what occurred on this country on 9/11. This Bush crime family would do anything. Nothing is beyond what they are capable of. So your fear is not irrational. I share it.
They're not subtle about their dishonesty. It's just blatant.
It's just right out there. It's like, screw you. This is what I'm going to do. Challenge me.
Yeah, in the rest of the world, it's like, how can you Americans not see that this man is a pathological liar? I mean, are you this gullible?
I don't know what's happened to us. I don't know what in any other country. Anytime the French get pissed off, they call a general strike and the whole country stops. When the people in former Soviet Republic of Georgia, when they get pissed off because they feel like their election was stolen, they turn out in the millions and everything stops.
Exactly.
When the people in the UK decide they've had enough, they turn out, the buses stop, the trains stop, the unions stop, everything stops. In this country, what do? We continue to go to Walmart.
Oh, God. It's just, you're absolutely right, and it's just so frustrating. It's just
the day may come, Charles, when we, the American public, realize what has happened, and we take some kind of direct, proactive action to stop it.
Well, you know, I think historians are going to judge Bush very harshly, and even more so, they'll look at people who
enabled him.
Exactly.
I hear you, Charles. I got to go. Thanks.
Have a good night.
All right, appreciate you checking in.
They're dancing pots, they're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats. They're taking over the boardrooms and their battle for the pride. And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until every Nazi.
Dirt. And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen
the It's about 10 before the hour.
In the starched white shirt, you will find bigger piggies stirring up.
Thanks to the crew who provided the tremendous amounts of lubricant to make this program possible tonight. Starting with our co-producer and engineer in Phoenix, Ian Huff, who manages everything from our flagship station, KPHX. He also answered your calls. Our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, Billy Foster, the moderator at the NovemRadio.com chat room, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Don't forget, Sam Cedar fills in for me tomorrow night, and I'll be live on Friday from KPTK in Seattle. Sam Cedar, the Sam Cedar, no cheap imitation. No Chinese knockoff. The real Sam Cedar. So play nice. Michael is calling from Newcastle, PA, who's been holding on forever. Michael, thanks for your patience.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing okay.
Very good. I think Quinton missed hitting a home run. I think he sprained his hamstring rounding third.
You're right.
Other than that, he would have been home free. But I'm a NovAM subscriber. I listen to your show, I think, every single show for the last 4 years.
Oh my God!
And
you're still sane.
I'm still sane.
Wow.
I wanted to mention though, because yesterday I was frustrated listening to the interview because I really think you got it right when you said Gravel's slightly insane and that he can't communicate his positions very well. I think he's not used to talking to people who accept him, so he's very paranoid. But I wanted to say something because this is very important. His idea about this initiative, because I researched a little bit. I'm not a Gravel supporter, by the way, but I'm a historian and a philosopher, so I know Federalist Papers. I read the Federalist 10. I know David Hume, the philosophers they went from.
Yes.
And the arguments have changed. There's a different – the faction was really the problem that Madison was addressing in Federalist 10.
Mm-hmm.
What Gravel was saying wasn't to get rid of representational democracy, but what you would actually, Mike Malloy would actually articulate Gravel's point better, and you have articulated his point in that there's a mechanism, a democratic mechanism that he wants to add to the process because we, like we said, you just said with the last caller, what are we supposed to do here? We've tried all these, the soapbox, we've tried the ballot box, we've tried the jury box,
right?
And he's saying to try to take that ballot box and add a nuance, not to scrap representational democracy, but to add a little more of a direct vote. And just say when people want to have an independent investigation for 9/11, if you had a citizens' council, that is a direct democratic nuance. It doesn't mean you change the whole system. It's just adding more direct thing there. But he doesn't articulate it well. And I think had it went better, the dynamic, because like I said, he's slightly insane. Which I kind of like, the dynamics of the debate. And think about it. He brought up a good point about the past. We have to wait until 1964. We have to hope that the tyranny of the few, the minority, the people who are in Congress that don't care about us, we have to hope they do our bidding.
Well, if I can jump in here, Michael, I understand what you're saying, but the tyranny of the few is a result of the cowardice of the majority. That's all. When you get to the level of the United States Senate or the United States House, there is no rational or logical reason why there should be the tyranny of the few. That makes no sense. And the only way that happens is if, in this case, the Democratic Party refuses to exert its own power. So I cannot blame the minority. I blame the majority.
I think but people have to realize, and I think because of the other problems with him in terms of him talking, we missed something, though. This is a progressive idea, and it's steeped in liberalism. I mean, what he's talking about is the basis of liberalism, because it's about people doing something active to initiate, whether it be legislative, like he's suggesting, or impeachment in terms of affecting the enforcement officers, which would be our executive branch. That's what liberalism is. So I can't believe it frustrates me to hear liberals who are degrading the idea. Now they can say the man's nuts, but what he's talking about and what no of the other Democrats are talking about, it is something like doing something where people participate. Now here's my criticism. My criticism is it's idealistic and probably will never happen. Just like Ron Paul wants to get rid of the Fed. There's lots of economic implications to it. Probably politically has too many barriers to overcome. But the dialogue there, and it makes at least for a nuanced discussion. Does that sound fair?
Well, if I can jump in here, I'm not denying that someone like Ron Paul or someone like Mike Gravel has a couple of good ideas, good arrows in their quiver. But my God, I would imagine that somewhere in George Bush's quiver, there are a couple of good ideas. What I'm saying is, if Mike Gravel, for example, using him as an example since he was on the program, if he has these revolutionary or radical ideas based in liberalism and he cannot articulate them, he might as well not have them.
Now, you can see why he was paranoid, though, Mike.
Well, no, I can't. If a man has decided to run for the presidency of the United States and he's going to drag his paranoia on stage, well, then I hate to be blunt, but to hell with him. I mean, that's not how it works. That's A. Here's B. There is no way in hell, if I'm understanding him correctly, that these direct initiatives on a national basis, if they work on a county or state level, fine. There's no way they can work. Because, I'm sorry?
It would be very rare on a national level to even have one, of course, but like, take the war in Iraq. Most people want out, but we have no way to affect.
But we do have a way. And that's
do,
to
but they don't have to listen to us.
But that's to prevail upon our elected representatives to do something. And I'm sorry, but I got to leave it there. I appreciate what you had to say, Michael. We'll talk again. I'll see you Friday night. Don't forget Sam Cedar tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.